Someone just needs to vamp.
All right, cool. Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to
doing anything.
Another episode of the Fresh Face Film Bro. We've taken a bit of a hiatus inadvertently. Mason and I were taking a look at our calendar and realized that we had not recorded a bunch of episodes recently. So we're coming off spring break. So school's going to be starting back up, and we're going to try our best to put some more episodes out, the workload's just going to ramp up again. So
there's about to be a whole load of content coming your way.
We're going
to
do more.
Yes, we're going to do our best.
We're sorry we've been absent.
Today, we're going to talk about the best film of 2024, Denis Villeneuve's sequel to the Frank Herbert adaptation. The adaptation of the Frank Herbert novel, Dune, the second one.
Dune.
If you haven't heard about it, if you've been off the socials,
I don't know how you haven't heard of that.
It's been garnering comparisons to the likes of The Empire Strikes Back,
The Two Towers.
Allegiant. From the Divergent trilogy.
The third Divergent movie.
Catching Fire.
Dude,
think it was the first?
When it rolled off my tongue, I was like, oh, that was the third one, wasn't it? No, it's Insurgent. That's the second one, right? Insurgent's the second one.
Yes, Insurgent's the second one.
It's being... There are comparisons to Justice League, Last Jedi...
Okay, but you could make a case for Last Jedi, though.
Last Jedi actually kind of does make sense, I guess.
Might be the best Justice of the trilogy.
I don't know. I was just talking. I didn't even know what I was saying.
Okay. Well, you know about the whole like Last Jedi movement it's actually a masterpiece.
Yeah, people love it.
Yeah,
people love it. They're coming around to it.
I don't know.
I think there's some inexcusable stuff.
I don't know if narratively Last Jedi is a masterpiece. I think most people say
technically,
visually.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah. Visually, it's great.
And I could see that with Dune Part 2. Yeah. You know, I can see that comparison.
All right.
Let's get to a real good sci-fi franchise, like Dune, unlike Star Wars.
Ooh. Okay.
Hey, but...
I definitely agree with you if we're not just solely talking about the originals.
I will be the knight in shining armor for the latter seasons of Star Wars The Clone Wars, because that's some of the best TV... animated television that's ever aired on.
Oh, dude, I love Star Wars.
On American
TV. I love Star Wars. I'm just on the Dune hype train.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I was such a big Star Wars diehard. I've been off it for about 10 years, but that was my childhood. So.
Oh,
yeah.
Same.
Now I'm Dune pilled.
Lego Star Wars?
Happily so.
Bro. Yeah. Don't get me started.
Lego Star Wars, The Clone Wars. I was running that up on Wii.
I ran up the OG trilogy.
Yeah. I had that on DS. Yeah.
Skywalker Saga goes crazy.
Yeah. But Dune 2 goes crazy.
Or no, Complete arguably. Saga. Skywalker's did like the new one or whatever.
Yeah.
Complete Saga on DS went crazy.
So I guess let's just give the people what they want. They probably want to hear...
Yeah, they don't want to recap or anything.
No. I mean, yeah. We're just going to assume that you've seen it. I think what people want to hear is, does this live up to the hype that it's receiving? I mean, if you go on Letterboxd, our Letterboxd users, it's... What is it number 6 on...
Yeah. Ever.
The top 250 narrative, which is ridiculous.
Above Godfather.
There is such thing as recency bias, and one should never discount that in light of a new film releasing. What's a good example of something that just fell? That was like, I mean, Oppenheimer, but it's sitting like a 4.3, movie.
When Spider-Verse dropped, that was like at a 4.7, I think once people calmed down, it has settled at like a 4.2. And I think ever since Spider-Verse came out, Letterboxd did a thing where they like haven't... new aggregate rating system to where like people can't review bomb as easily. But if I'm in favor of review bombing anything, it's Dune 2.
Yeah.
Poor Things is one that came down. Yeah. It was like at a 4.4. It's at a 4.1 now.
Gotcha. Yeah. The Batman was pretty high too. I remember that.
Yes. Yeah. But in all honesty, I don't see Dune Part 2 coming down that much. It'll come down a little, but I don't... It's going to be above a 4.3.
And
or
rightly
so,
because I think...
Okay. Good transition.
Yeah.
That was a good transition.
Mason and I, we had a good discussion about Tenet. Mm-hmm. Man, oh, we need to do a Tenet review. Okay, this is not the Tenet review, but this just reminded me.
Not the Tenet pod.
Okay,
FYI, we saw Tenet in 70mm. There will be a Tenet episode soon.
Yes, sir. It did look incredible. But Mason and I sort of reached a conclusion on the drive back that it can really suck to overhype a film when you're just caught up in the moment and you're like, this is, and you just put a superlative on it.
Yeah. I've done, and I'm like the most guilty of that because I love doing that, and then it bites me.
And what
I think that's the magic of the movie, though.
Yeah,
like you're it's an event, like it's everywhere you go, and like when you get there, it's like you're talking to people.
Yeah, I mean, and sometimes you just gotta let that happen.
And
you know, it's fun to get caught in the moment, and
especially for this for me, because it's like I don't know, it's like people who've seen Dune 2, you probably built your whole day around seeing Dune 2, and it was just like everything was leading up to that moment. I had done so much Denis homework because up until this point, I had only seen Blade Runner 2049, and I had not seen any of his movies. And before this one, I watched a good handful, including Prisoners. We got a Prisoners hater in the building.
Yeah, Prisoners is good. Go watch it, guys.
Go watch it.
Excuse me.
But I watched Prisoners, Sicario, and Dune 1, and...
He locked in.
Yeah, I locked in, and I think part of why Dune 2 is such a successful sequel is, like, I feel like he's been waiting, like, Denis has been waiting to get the reins to a trilogy like this, because I think, I mean, just look at Blade Runner and how he brought that story around, like, after all those years. You know what I mean? I just think we're in good hands.
Yeah.
That's all I need to say. I just think he's a master behind the camera. And I think we've let the filmography build, and what else is there to say? But, you know, just look at it. I mean, all you have to do is look at it.
Yeah. Circling back to the superlatives, what I found myself saying after the credits roll is that, you know, this has got to be one of the best movies of the 21st century and one of the greatest sci-fi movies of all time.
I agree.
That is a hefty statement.
Oh.
And I'm a little scared by it, and I'm like, I hope it doesn't bite me in the butt, but you know what?
Wait. One of the best of the 21st century, period, movies. Period.
Yes. I mean, it's one of the best movies of the 21st century. I think it's probably top 10.
That's not hard.
I think it's maybe top
5. That's not hard. I don't know, man. That's
probably top 10.
Only because we're... Look.
I think it's top 5 sci-fi, probably. No,
I don't know.
Top 10 of the century, top 10 sci-fi. Make the list how you want to. I think it belongs
to both. If we're saying one of the best of the century, it's not hard. There's a lot of good movies.
No.
Yeah.
There are.
Yeah.
No Country, Mulholland Drive, Parasite.
But just like
I'm putting it
But just like
I'm putting it
I don't know, but just
like,
but
dude,
just
there's a lot of good movies.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, but like in terms of sci-fi, like this and in this stretch of film history, I think it's easily the best. And I don't know. I'm gonna be for real. I really like Dune 1. I think it's easily my least favorite Denis movie, and I wasn't
I
wasn't really swept in with it. I didn't really know anything about Dune going into it, and I was sort of left feeling like, yeah, this is all right. And I was a little skeptical about Dune 2, if I'm being honest. I wasn't really buying it. I'm gonna be honest. I was not buying it, but I think it's purely a. I think it's purely like a visual thing for me, like why it works so well. It's way more ambitious than the first one. Mm-hmm. And I love the world of Dune now. Like I can't stop thinking about it. Like I might go pick up the book soon. I'm thinking about it. Like that's how much Dune 2 got me into.
I have it right there. You can borrow it.
Okay, sick. Yeah. That's how much Dune 2 got me into the world of Dune.
Yeah.
I will. Hold on. I'm going to let you go.
I don't have much to say other than I agree with most of what you all are saying. I thought it was great, amazing, at most points.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to go full force on it. Like Ethan and I have had this conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm not ready to call it one of the best of the century or just because I've been bit by that too much. And also I've got a few problems with it. Like I don't think it's just like stone cold masterpiece, perfect movie right off the bat. I just don't feel that way yet. I might one day, but I don't know. I need to watch it again too. I want to watch it again.
I think it's a masterpiece, but I don't think it's perfect.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
That's definitely fair.
sort of piggybacking off of what Jacob said, I found myself very impressed by the first Dune. I liked it a lot. I have it sitting at a comfortable 8 on Letterboxd. And just for the record, I don't believe in the finality of a star rating. You know, like art is a fluid thing, and it's about like how it interacts with where you are in life and your personal experience, and it's a lot and it's going to change. But I think I like Dune 1, and from what I've seen from Denis, it's about in the middle of his filmography for like the 4 movies that I've seen.
Certainly better than Prisoners for you. No,
I do think it's better than Prisoners. Jacob just...
I definitely don't think
shook
it
his head.
I'm with you on this. No, I think it's his worst movie, probably.
I think
part of this is because bad. I don't really think it's his fault. I think that adapting Dune is incredibly difficult. Mm-hmm. And I think, how are you... I mean, because Dune 1 is just exposition, the movie.
That's what I was going
to
say.
And that's the whole thing. Yep. It's like, there's so much that you have to explain and build upon that the movie never... took a breath. And part of that was a good thing, because it's almost 3 hours long and it did not feel long whatsoever. Like, I blinked and it was over, and part of that was fun. The other thing is just that I didn't feel emotionally connected until Dune 2, until once Dune 1 kind of felt like you were done with homework. It was like, now we're getting started.
I think Denis did a fair job of
Well, you've read the books. You would probably know better.
Yeah, so he sort of bisects the book. And I think he did a fair job of incorporating engaging... I don't want to say, like, the movie revolves around the action sequences, but, like, he kept things moving in Dune 1. And I will say, one of my main gripes is that it's hard not to... If you're going to make a trilogy, it's hard not to make one of the movies feel like it exists solely for the purpose of making a sequel. I mean, that's what I found with... Force Awakens. Just a lot of movies. I feel like the first one often, it's just like, this is just here so they can make a second one.
Batman Begins, a little bit.
Yeah, so I feel that a little bit with Dune, but what caught me right away was the world building. Unlike Jacob, I was like thrown immediately just with the production design and with the visual effects that Denis brings. I mean, he knocks it out of the park, and I didn't have a problem. I was sold. So the second only further... just drew me into the world of Dune, and it was just like I was just enveloped in the narrative, and that's why narratively it works. I feel like the world building really helps with any narrative shortcomings that you might express, and I also think that the book is adapted pretty well.
Yeah.
So, the first Dune I thought was good, but the second is just leaps and bounds above it.
See, I think some of the problems that Jacob had with the first are a few of the problems I have with the second, and it's problems that I felt carried over a little bit. I wasn't really able to sink my teeth in, like, the characters, and I wasn't really emotionally invested. That's really my only gripe. And, like, it's not a huge one, but it's a decently big one enough for me to be, like, holding back a little bit.
I think for me, the world of Dune is just like so big and like kind of overwhelming on first watch that I like by the end of Dune 1, I was comfortable. And now that I had gotten over that hump, I was like finally, I feel like I was able to set aside time to like get to like know the character more. So maybe if I rewatch a Dune after seeing Dune 2, I would probably like it a lot more now that I know what's going on. But I mean, even from just like not even just an exposition thing, I just think Dune 2 is...
It's a better movie.
It's better movie. It's operating at such a higher level.
I think, you know, you get pigeonholed by having the movie set on a planet like Arrakis, which is all sand, and he makes do with tons of visual variety.
It looks incredible.
The fight scene with Austin Butler.
That's one of the greatest.
The middle,
like the black and white part.
The only problem visually what I have with that is the crowds in that look like FIFA.
I'm not looking
at, like seriously yeah. the crowd
I'm okay
in that
because I'm not looking at the crowds. I'm looking at
The crowds take up so much of the frame.
I'm not even that. I just mainly mean it from like a color, thing.
I mean, it's
Getty Prime. I'm glad they made it black and white and stuff, but like It's just some of the stuff that's like, yeah, that's obviously CGI. It's noticeable to me.
The scale is massive, and it's, I think it's just part of the par for the course. Like when you're making something that big, is that just like there's going to be a lot of CG these days, and it's going to look some of it will look a little awkward.
Yeah, when you're doing huge,
just like massive set pieces like that. And I don't really think now correct me if I'm wrong. I don't really think we've seen set pieces this big in a minute.
No,
like in a movie.
No, I certainly don't have any problem.
Probably
with
not
the
since
set.
The last Denis movie.
Exactly.
I certainly don't have any problem with the set pieces. I have problem with the sometimes like opening shots and establishing shots and some of the like crowds and huge, like.
Do you think it looks a little like too factory?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like it was digitally done, which it was. Which this is another thing that this like it unfairly has it. Like, is going against the movie. This is something I told Ethan on the way back. Everything looks so good. So when you have a few shots of CGI that are, like, par or subpar, it's, like, very jarring to me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, that's kind of unfair, but I think everything looks amazing other than, like, a few. Like, the crowds in that scene took me out of it. That's how bad it was to me.
I can see that, but I don't know. I think, for me, it's just kind of like a... I raised my eyebrow, but I was able to get back into it.
Yeah, I'm not focused on the crowd. I mean, if that's what we're going to nitpick, I think it's solidifying its case for being a great movie.
Well, that's not my biggest problem with it, certainly. But
Technically,
it's a masterpiece, technically.
Yeah.
That's not where my problem is. It's Greg Frazier.
I was also going to say, narratively, I would say that the pacing is near perfect. I really don't have... I mean, it's... I would say it felt long, but that was because I was anticipating the end. I wasn't sure if they were going to stay true to the book and follow everything through, but they did. Because I wasn't sure if they were going to prolong the fight with Austin Butler until the next... I was like, is that Dune Messiah? But, I mean, that's in the first book. So, while it felt long, I thought that the pacing stayed fresh and that I was constantly engaged in that.
I didn't think it felt long. That's not my problem where... I think this is another thing that we were talking about. I think the third act, it just, he's adapting a book. He has to finish through the book. I think it would have been very beneficial to either add another 45 minutes or just make a third movie at the end of the second book. If the third act flies by, it felt like to me we saw Fade Rautha, and 30 minutes later he's lying on the floor dead. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, to me, it felt, like, very jarring. And, like, I don't have any problems with the first two acts, pacing-wise. I don't know if that's fair. It was moving really fast. And it had to.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you could say that, but I feel like, to me, that's, like, kind of like a caveat. It's like, well, it's a book adaptation, so it has to move fast.
Yeah.
Well, it could have been a little bit better.
I mean, it did move fast, but, like... It was so amazing, like his character. I didn't really mind. I knew that was coming. Mm-hmm. Like, let's be real. And
yeah.
So, it was sort of swept up in a frenzy. You know what I mean?
Everything
in Dune 2 is working in harmony very well.
It's very synergistic. I mean, it just has an electricity to it.
Like the saying that I was floating.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah,
I think you could say that for like the entire runtime, and I think that's just because everything is working in conjunction with each other so strongly. And I think we didn't even talk about the cast other than Austin Butler, but it's just
one thought.
Yeah,
Fade Rautha's character in the book does appear sort of towards the back half, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. He's not like if we're talking chronologically, that was about correct. So
yeah, it's just like
any development that he would have gotten would have been a creative liberty.
It's not,
and the fact that Denis has decided the first Dune book is in two parts and Messiah is in one part. You really like trying to fit in the rest of the book that he hadn't adapted yet. There's not a ton of leeway for him to explore Fade Rautha's character.
For me, it's not a character development standpoint. It's a screen time. I felt like we didn't spend any time with Austin Butler.
But it's a screen time thing. He capitalized on every single moment that he was on screen.
Well, he stole the show.
To me,
it felt like he was on screen for a total of 10 minutes.
I feel like
it was more like 20, 25.
Well, see, I didn't think it was that much. I could be wrong.
No, but I love Fade Rotha so much, I felt like we were with them for half the movie.
See, to me, it just didn't feel like that. It felt like it was...
And I think, again, that's just like, I'm going back to what I said earlier, I almost feel like that's what you're going to get when adapting Dune. Like, how much of that is really, like, Denis, like, not wanting to focus on that? Mm-hmm. Or is there just, like, you're automatically constricted with that unless you take huge creative liberties. And I've already seen some concerns that people are going to, if he, like, adapts the book, like, bar for bar, that people are not going to like Dune Messiah.
Yes. No, it's not. And I don't, it's just like, I don't know if I'm allowed to have those critiques because I haven't read the book, but to me, it felt a little.
Just a little much.
Yeah. It was just, it was too much. And it's also like, it was like, we're building up to this huge war and we're learning so much about Timmy's character. And then he just walks in and beats Fade, and then it's over.
Right.
To me, like, it felt like the stakes in the third act weren't as high as the build up. I don't know if that's fair, but
this is a complete subject change, but it's something I've been thinking about. Do you think when Frank Herbert wrote Dune, he was thinking about contemporary things happening in the world at the time, or what?
Yeah.
Because when I look at Dune, maybe it's just because, like, I grew up in a post 9/11 world, so maybe I'm just like made to think about comparisons like that.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I feel like a lot of sci-fi will take analogies on the geopolitical politics.
For sure.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Definitely. It's all over.
I feel like allegory is. I mean, in science fiction, it's basically synonymous.
Like,
yeah.
Do you think? Like, all I'm saying is, like, do you think Frank Herbert, like, had that in mind?
Absolutely. Like, I mean,
yeah. Because the spice being because it's drugs just
because
and,
I think it. It's I think it's
quite obvious.
I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's the most interesting and, like, most mature. Like,
but see, it didn't go deep enough into that for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's more. It's more of a let's sink into our seats and have a visual spectacle than sink our teeth in narratively or get a bunch of allegorical stuff, which is fine.
Well, but that's not Denis. That's not. I'm
not complaining about that. I'm just saying it's not that type of movie for me. It's more of a visual spectacle.
I agree.
I'm just saying that was something I was thinking about as I was walking out.
Selfishly, I would have liked the more formalistic, like, allegorical religious stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fine with what he did. I think it's certainly better from, like, a just broader audience.
I think we need to look at it for what it is. And Denis, I mean, he's not a formalist director, not particularly. He experiments a little bit with it with the Prince. No, Irelina. That's Florence Pugh. I'm trying to think of Paul's sister, the baby that Jessica's having. Yeah. The scene, that was like 2001-esque. There was a little bit of Kubrick,
but he wasn't going that far.
Almost not quite as like daring as something that Glazer would do, but no. It was
certainly not close.
I think it would probably be a little bit jarring for someone who is not super familiar with that, like, aesthetic. And so that would seem risk-tanking to someone who,
isn't used to that. That's true. But it's also, like...
That's also not Denis' bag. Like, that's not...
See, I would say that partly that's Denis' bag. There's certainly moments in Arrival and Blade Runner 2049 that are a little bit...
I can't speak on Blade Runner 2049.
But don't you think that there are some moments in Arrival that are little bit formalistic?
A little bit. Yeah,
so
I think he dabbles in it though. That's not his bread and butter.
Yeah, no, it's not. And I'm certainly not complaining.
I think
it's an interesting conversation
it for
to
what
have.
It is, though. Yeah,
I'm not complaining.
I think his bread and butter is. I say so much. I think his bread and butter is spectacle and his
and scale
and how he works with his actors.
Yeah,
but see, to me, I think it gets a little bit lost in the Tenet-ness of it.
I disagree. I think it's very rooted in its narrative, even while accomplishing, like, spectacle feats.
See, I didn't get a ton out of it narratively, and I just didn't feel the emotional stakes.
I felt it extremely. Okay, I want to hit on one thing that we talked about earlier, which is I don't want to, like, mince your words at all, but what I gathered is that you felt that the emotional bond between Chani and Paul wasn't particularly strong, and you didn't feel very moved by the relationship, and you also felt that it was kind of like accelerated.
Yeah, definitely. It's also a little bit too self-serious, and I don't think Denis's good at stuff like that. That's where my problems are pitted in Arrival. It's like it's like Paul leaning over and kissing Chani, and it's like the sweeping score and stuff. It's just like a little bit. I don't know. It's just too.
A little bit like maybe we have to do this or something.
Yeah,
like
it just does. It's not. I didn't feel it. I didn't feel like it was genuine. I don't think that that's an acting problem. I think that's a writing problem. I think that's just not Denis's bread and butter. It's more the visual storytelling, mm-hmm. and that's the same problems that I have with Nolan.
Yeah,
Nolan just can't write.
I think this is a far less clunky romance than a Nolan movie. I mean,
yeah, it is.
And I thought that the romance in this was serviceable to good, and I think the most interesting thing. Yeah, you could say that he doesn't spend enough time showing them falling in love. If that makes sense. That they're just like that. She's hot. My argument is that she's hot and she's cold. What seems like immediacy is actually just Chani's never 100% fully on board.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
With their relationship. She's always skeptical of Paul. She's not one of the fundamentalists. She's like just even from the beginning. She's very.
You see your relationship from like a group point of view rather than just like one on one.
Yes,
that's true. But all the one on one scene. It just doesn't work for me. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. But it's also, it's not even just like a, are they in love? It's for me, it's like, how well do they know each other? Because they don't meet. They meet for about 2 minutes in the first one. And in the second one, it felt like to me that they were kissing about 30 to 40 minutes in. And we're not even really focused on just him for the first act. So it feels like they don't have much time to get to know each other. And then they're all over each other making out.
Yeah, but Dune's not a love story, really. I mean, it's I don't.
The way that he cut it at the end in the third act, it felt like that's what he was trying to tell us, though.
I think that
the love story felt like it was a lot of.
I think the love story is a reflection of Paul's. I don't want to say vanity, but approach to power. Before he drinks the. Like the liquid from the worm. Yeah, the water of life.
Mm-hmm.
He is actively denying opportunities to take higher positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like Stilgar's like, you know, I mean, he's hyping him up. And of he's course. Like, no, I don't. He's like, this is not good. And partially it's due to visions, but I also think that like he genuinely, like he's not a Fremen by blood. He's been welcomed into their group, but he understands like it for what it is, and mm-hmm. he doesn't want to be like a leader because he's new, and that's also just that's not
yeah.
It just it doesn't feel. I mean, that makes sense. That said, I think there's a distinct change that occurs after he's like drinking the water of life.
Got warm-pilled.
Yeah, he. You could say he becomes power hungry. You could argue that his vision just becomes clear and he knows like the steps that he needs to take to
mm-hmm.
act as a messiah to the Fremen to ensure that it kind of felt a little Infinity War like where he's like, I've seen all the possibilities and there's only one.
I thought of Doctor Strange during that.
It sort of felt like, hey, listen, we got to do this. And so I don't know if that was either him. It could be a story of corruption. I think you could read it as that, and Chani's a reflection of his character and sort of a vehicle to show that he's soiling as a person and that his purity is gone. Or you could just say that she's hot and cold, she doesn't know where she stands, and uh-huh. that Paul is just... He drinks the water of life, he's clear about what he needs to do, he's leading, and he knows that he needs to take Princess Irelina as a wife. And Chani just doesn't appreciate that. She feels rejected.
Yes.
She feels cast aside. And
it's not primarily a love story, but I think that's in play for the second for.
But for I think that's I think and that's also, plenty to sink your teeth into though.
If like, you're what
I think that's plenty to sink your teeth into though. Like all of that all of the the stakes that surround that, I say that's pretty, that's more than enough, I think.
I just didn't feel it.
It's not necessarily impressive, but I think I got
it's serviceable.
I got what I needed.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, but to me, like just going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's a big enough problem for me. It's in enough of the movie for if we're saying it's serviceable, it's not going to be up with all the other greats. You know what I mean? That does not feel like a caveat to me. If we look at it through the scope of the first, it feels like to me the second one was always going to be about Chani's and Paul's relationship.
I don't know. I feel like
that's literally what the whole first.
I feel like what I'm gathering is that all three of us go into Dune looking for different things. Maybe.
Yeah, I think that's probably very true.
Okay. Well,
I think that's entirely fair.
Like there's 15 montage sequences in the first where he's dreaming of Chani, and then just saying like in the second, well, it's not about like the love story, and it's not about that. That feels like caveats to me a little bit.
I think all that's entirely fair, but for me, it's just like that's not what I was going into Dune 2 for, like their relationship. And
yeah, and that's
like,
fair.
Think, you know, I don't know. It's just like not exactly what I'm looking for.
And that's
think
also
what those there was fine with me, but I would understand why that would come off as very shallow.
And I am being a little bit hypocritical because like this just goes back to Tenet. It's like that's not what I'm looking for in Tenet. So, you know what I mean? If we want to say, like, the visual storytelling is amazing, that's totally fair, and it is. You know what I mean? So, it's just, like, there's just a few too many narrative problems for me. And I think, like, just to say that that's not Denis' bread and butter and we should only focus on the visual storytelling is just, I don't know, it feels a little silly to me.
Speaking about characters, I mean, I love the characters.
Yeah, I think that's the strongest part of the movie. I think
they're amazing.
Well, I mean,
visually,
of course, definitely. But I think the characters besides that, mm-hmm. really, I mean, they're brought to life by the performances, which I think I'd like to get to in a second, because I don't think there's a single bad performance in this, but...
There's one to me. It's not a bad performance, I just don't know what Christopher Walken's
doing. I do want to get this out of the way. Every time I see Timothée Chalamet in a movie, uh-huh. I see Timothée Chalamet.
Yeah,
first and foremost. I mean, he was great as Paul, but like
I feel that way with Zendaya a little bit.
Really? No, I think she was good, but I don't know. Some actors will always just be the person to me. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's because he has a very distinct look as a man, but
I think it's also
I feel that way with Christopher Walken.
Yeah,
it's like this guy's a Hollywood star. He hasn't acted in like 10 years. Mm-hmm. Why are we giving him this part? It's just because it's like a big name to me, a little bit. He also just doesn't do much. I feel like anyone could have been in that part.
This sounds weird saying this, but like I haven't seen Call Me By Your Name, but this is my favorite Timothy performance.
Reserving the right to put his performance in Call Me By Your Name at first?
Yeah.
Maybe.
What about Bones and All?
I forgot about that, if I'm being honest. I forgot
you
that.
Don't like the cannibal stuff?
I forgot that existed until 5 seconds ago. But I mean, I don't know. People love that movie. They always talk about his performance. So
no, I think it's his best performance. Mm-hmm. Probably.
I don't know. He kind of went off in Interstellar.
Oh. For his 5 minutes of screen time, yeah. I think Pugh is amazing, and I'm glad that she's gonna be in the third a lot.
I thought Florence Pugh. I mean, I think I've just come to expect her to be incredible, whatever she's in. I don't think she was particularly impressive in this. I thought she was just good.
Anya Taylor-Joy jump scare.
That's seriously. Fair. Rebecca's very good.
Oh, she was incredible.
Yeah, Rebecca's great. Yeah. But no, what do you all think about Christopher Walken?
I thought he was fine.
I don't know.
I agree that you could have had any old actor replace him.
It just feels a little silly to me.
I don't know. I feel like the Emperor obviously is not getting much to do, and Christopher Walken's an old man. The Emperor's an old man. Works for me.
Yeah.
I really liked Austin Butler. I think he was one of my
That's
favorites.
What everybody
see, said. See, Austin Butler kind of has that, like...
Oh, you just see him for Austin Butler.
Yeah, well,
he's
accent,
a star.
His accent came
he's
through.
He's so good, man.
His
so
accent. Good. I think he's a great actor. His accent came through a few times. I was like, that's Elvis. That's not... You
he's
know what I mean?
To get rid
and
of
it helps because he's incredibly pale and bald. So you can't really see him as Elvis, but...
Yeah, you don't really see Austin Butler... Austin Butler when you look at him, but like in the voice there are a couple
of
times
the combination of just like pasty white skin, black teeth, and bald head is crazy on Getty Prime. Like, that's...
Yeah.
It's a very striking decision, I'll say. Mm-hmm. Of course, you don't get that on Arrakis because they don't have a black son, but that was just something that I...
We also... You were saying that it's not black and white in the first.
It's not. No. It? No, no, no. There is a scene.
That's kind of silly.
Yeah. There's a scene. Mm. Remember the scene in Dune 1 where they're like torturing people and it's like raining?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the guy's like... Wah, 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 wah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That yeah, is. Yeah, yeah. That's Getty Prime.
That's
yeah.
on Getty Prime.
And it's just
You could be normal. Like, well, it's raining and the clouds are out. So the sun's not...
yeah, but... I mean, I guess you could.
Listen.
That seems a little silly.
It's a really cool creative decision. I am cool with retconning. Like, that is fine.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm certainly glad he made it black and white.
It is so much cooler.
Because that's where,
yeah.
like, the baby formalism yeah, kind of starts to creep yeah. in, and I'm a sucker for that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. no, I think that was a great decision. And there were also, like... There were so many moments where I was just like, wow. The sound system was amazing.
Oh, the sound was incredible.
The yep. subs were booming.
The sound was incredible.
You know, it was very engrossing.
Subs were booming in a tasteful way. Not in like it like rattled your head. It like was very tasteful.
The sound
sometimes the subs be booming for no reason other than to annoy me.
I do think the sound was one of the better parts of this film.
Absolutely,
it really made the movie. And seeing this in Dolby,
you gotta do it.
Dolby is amazing. The technology is incredible.
In the extra $10 to change your life.
See, I want to watch it in here and see if I have the same experience.
I don't think I will, honestly. Yeah, no. We also, like, dude, you picked the perfect seats. We were, yeah. Oh, I mean, yeah. I think we couldn't have had a better seat.
Yeah. No, it was amazing.
Also, that theater was just, I was amazed by that, the theater of just the, like...
The setup?
Just, yeah, just the setup. It was amazing.
It was very spacious.
Yeah, the reclining chairs.
Everything, yeah. Like, you couldn't see anyone else in their seats. Mm-hmm. It was definitely, like, yeah, it might have been the best theater I've ever been in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, out of all the AMCs.
So we
got to
run it back sometime.
Out of all the AMCs I've been to, that was the best one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no,
Fresh Face Film Bro,
great.
Meet up at AMC Thoroughbred, TBD date.
We're buying the theater.
We're doing a live podcast in the parking lot.
I do think I was trying to think of my favorite scene the other day.
That's okay. That's an extra. Seriously, that's one of my biggest like.
Compliments.
If I was to prove how good this film is, I would say, okay, tell me the best scene in the film. There's probably 12 to choose from, and I'm not. I think.
See, that's too many.
No,
me,
I think you could literally like it
I
is.
Can agree
it
with
is
that.
Over 10.
I can agree with that.
There's not a bad scene, and I think they are all like almost equally strong. They are so like it is such a good movie.
I might say the first scene is the very best one.
First scene's great, but like the last scene's incredible. The scene that that we saw the snippet where Paul reunites with Gurney. That's great.
Yeah.
Riding the worm.
Riding the worm is that's one of the best sequences I think. I mean, of the past 4 years.
Yeah.
This is just an aside, but the levitation that he uses, like the Harkonnens, like floating, it looks amazing.
Yeah,
it
that
looks
was
so
that
good.
Was good. Yeah, the las guns looked really good.
Yeah,
and the sound was amazing.
Oh, that the scene where Paul like takes down the Ornithopter.
Yeah,
that was incredible.
It's either that or the beginning.
The other reason I love Dune so much is that the world is so rustic and lived in. I feel like a lot of sci-fi feels very polished.
Clean,
It feels very
sterile,
polished and clean,
yeah.
But Dune feels like more of, this is what it would look like if humans ever went into space and there were aliens to me.
It has the sand thing going for it. It makes you feel like it's gritty, kind of. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's, yeah.
I just prefer that in general. So
you said gritty.
Oh. Grit.
I also think the Austin Butler like the fight scene on Getty Prime obviously,
and the fight scene with Paul too.
I mean,
great.
The battle scene,
the sunset,
like the before they.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, what's the sunset?
Oh well, in the final shot in the final scene when they're fighting the sun in the background.
Oh,
and
yeah.
like the there's like a border thing. It's kind of splitting the screen. Mm-hmm. Really nice. I love the way he framed that. And also, this is something that I said immediately after. I love the decision by Denis to just let that be sound. We don't need a Zimmer score over that. You know?
No.
I'm glad that it was just sound.
Also, shout out to the interns at Remote Control. Oh, y'all killed it.
Dude, they went crazy.
They're
additional Zimmer's composers.
Zimmer's listening to this.
Additional composers, y'all went off. My hat's off. I think I might try to like figure out who's on it and reach out to That's the additional good, composers.
Great idea. Yeah.
Because, you know.
Does Hans Zimmer even know his name's attached to Dune 2?
Does Hans Zimmer even know the names of his additional composers?
No.
He probably not. That's a better question. Yeah, because that actually might not be true. Yeah. That's
kind of
sad.
Hans's interns.
Y'all killed it.
Killed it.
Fantastic
job. Great job, guys.
Yeah, those new cues were.
There's an odd. But I did think it was funny. Like in 22, they're like, Hans Zimmer has finished the music for Dune 2. I was like, well, that's because it's rinse and repeat. That's like saying.
Did they say he finished? I thought they were just saying he started.
No. I mean, like, well, I mean, it was like a full year before the movie came out.
Well, also, this movie was supposed to come out in like September of last year.
That's true.
But also, like,
before everything.
It's but that's still way before. It's the Star Wars deal where if you make the first movie and it's a trilogy, oftentimes. 2/3 of the music is already going to be done. You're just going to like add some little bells and whistles.
Now,
to the
I will say
cues.
That was kind of a risk to do that because there was no guarantee there was going to be a second, and they didn't think the first was going to do that well at the box office. So
that's true. That yeah, this you know yeah.
Same with Dune Messiah, which I think it like after the screenings and the premieres, it leaked that it was like yeah, there's going to be a Dune Messiah. Because Denis said he was writing it, but
yeah, the love theme. I don't know. It's beautiful. Love
it.
Yeah,
I don't know what it's Teach called. Fan. I haven't found it
it's
yet.
It's amazing.
It's great.
It's
amazing. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. And there were so many. I don't know. There was just so many moments where I was just like
also,
jaw on the floor, like just in terms of just the movie overall.
I want to say that from a score standpoint, I think a lot of times when I'm watching a film, I subconsciously process the music and the visuals as separate, but the way that the score complements the visual aspect without not being like undetectable, but it's just it's not a subtle score, but it works within the world so well that it doesn't draw attention to itself.
Yeah,
and it really works as
Which
a nice supplementary material, and that is so rare.
Yeah, that's hard for Zimmer.
Yeah. It is. Certainly. It is very rare.
If you think of Interstellar, it's like what an amazing score. Does it work with the movie? Kind of.
Yeah, but you really think of the score and the movie as separate.
Yeah.
With this, I don't think. Yeah, it's the score is
yeah,
the part
you're not
of the
listening
movie.
To
yeah.
it as in like oh like yeah. I want to see what he's doing there.
Yeah.
It's more of just like oh this is
this
like,
is
this
yeah.
is in, this is in the world.
Natural. Yeah. It's working. Yeah.
Yeah.
What did we? we didn't talk about Javier.
How the what?
Javier.
Bro. Stilgar. Everyone needs a guy like Stilgar in their life
to
hype him
up. I felt
like
it was a little much.
Bro, no, actually,
it was like
I think,
too many times.
I think it's
it was so
I think
funny.
It's a great comedic device. I think some of it's intentionally meant to be very funny.
Is he funny in the book? Like,
no,
there's no way he's comedic relief in the book.
Yeah. To me, it was comedic relief. I don't know if that was intentional,
yeah.
but
no,
I loved it.
And
I think
it works for the most
also,
part.
Also, Javier. Wait,
okay, yeah, you got it. Yeah.
This is Javier Bardem in an interview the other day. Someone asked him, he was like, like, how do you have the range to do Dune 2 and The Little Mermaid? He's like, I did The Little Mermaid for my daughter. I did Dune 2 for my son, but the paycheck is for both of them.
Hey. Yeah. Facts.
But Lyle Lyle Facts. Crocodile is just for himself.
What the?
Yeah, I want to know which movies are for Javier. I'd be interested.
No Country. Didn't do that one for the kids, surely.
He's one of the best actors.
You tell me
today.
Didn't do that for
Absolutely.
His daughter?
Yeah. But yeah, one of the best scenes as well. The scene where he's in the center and he's like nobody, but he's like I'm in charge. He's like nobody can fight
oh,
me.
Oh, Paul is?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah,
then,
yeah.
And then
yeah.
he starts telling people about their
right
dreams.
The
They're turn. Like, "What's up,
Agib?" Yeah. yeah, right at the turn, they go.
Right, whenever the movie drops on digital, someone needs to make like a counter of every time he says it.
Dude, it's gotta
That'd be
north.
Crazy
it's gotta be north of like 30.
20 minutes.
Oh.
Man. Yeah.
What an event. What yeah. a moment. What
it
a moment
really
of movies.
Is a spectacle. I will say this is it felt big enough to the type of it felt like the type of movie that you like tell your kids. What was going on when you saw Dune 2?
Yes. Yeah, I will.
That's like, a little much for
no,
me, but
no.
I was like, I'll be like, I was with
it was March of 2024.
I was with the homies.
I will say, going back to like March this 7th. Biting me in the butt too many times, mm-hmm. to a lesser extent, certainly, I might have said that about the first, and I certainly wouldn't say that today. You know what I mean? I think when we walked out mm-hmm. of the first Dune, when we watched yeah. it, we were like, oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And then in my estimation, it slowly kind of started mm-hmm. coming down to earth.
Yeah.
So hopefully that does not happen.
It'll,
with Dune 2.
I think it'll inevitably come down to earth.
In due time, it could, but also I would be willing to bet that it.
I think even after the dust settles,
it's
still
alive.
Even after
the hype train dies down a little bit, I think people are still.
Yeah.
I mean, I hope it is. I hope it is. Yeah. I'm happy for Denis. I'm happy that he's in the budget that he wants.
Yeah.
And
I think we've discovered that Denis is absolutely one of the best directors working today.
Mm-hmm.
And he really, in order to maximize his directorial potential, he really needs a good screenplay to support him because he can bring it to life better than
really
pretty much anybody.
Something interesting is that Dune 1 and 2 are the first movies that he's written by himself since his first movie, Incendies. However you pronounce that.
I think.
That's interesting
to
me.
I mean, he's slowly kind of separating himself from his contemporaries.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think,
you know, I don't think most people would say Denis is better than Nolan. I don't think most people would say that, but...
I think he is.
I think he is.
I said that after we watched Tenet. I think he has been for the past 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, he's
a
better director than Nolan.
Denis could make Interstellar. Nolan could not make...
I was going to say...
Nolan could not make Prisoners or Sicario.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Quick thought experiment.
Maybe Sicario.
What would we be
maybe.
Talking about if Nolan made Dune 2 and Denis made Oppenheimer?
That's just hard to envision a world that Denis makes Oppenheimer.
That actually makes no sense.
Yeah,
I feel like Denis would like kill Oppenheimer though. It'd be so good.
Maybe I don't think the character.
The character would be as strong.
It'd be a lot more courtroom drama and down to earth instead of like less fan. It'd be a lot less fantastical.
Well, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
No, I think the opposite. I think Denis would have gotten bored with the courtroom stuff. I only say that because
I don't know if he's like if he could still, I don't know if this is a thing of his past or if this mm-hmm. is just his trajectory. I don't know if he could still make a grounded movie like Sicario or Prisoners today.
Oh, I'm sure
that's
he could.
True. That's true. No,
like I don't know if that's something he might return to or if that's something he's done with.
Well, I mean, I haven't seen Incendies, but Sicario is really his only grounded movie. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, Prisoners.
Well, I mean,
Arrival. Yeah, Prisoners pretty... I wouldn't say Arrival.
I always say grounded in real life.
Okay.
Yes, then it's not grounded.
It's supernatural. Are you talking about scale or supernatural?
Both.
I mean, okay. I mean, like a realism.
Yeah, I don't know.
Non-sci-fi fantasy, whatever.
But no, I mean, it's certainly... He's got, like, 4 projects underway right now. So, I mean, it's not going to stop anytime soon. Certainly exciting to see what he does next.
I can't wait. I'm very eager
to see his next movie mm-hmm. that's not titled Dune Messiah.
So Dune Messiah is not his next film, though, right?
I don't know.
He promised that he would take a break because he said it was wearing down on him too much. Mm.
Good
so
for him.
He's
good
got
also,
a,
I think he has full power to do that whenever he wants to.
Yeah, I think his next... there's a working title for his next movie. It's like Rendezvous with Rama, and it's a sci-fi something. So, you know.
Mm.
Mark Ruffalo's aged like 10 years.
He looks great. Mark, you're doing a great job.
The Oscars happens in 5 minutes.
Yeah, anyone who's listening to this, well, I've already seen our Oscars live stream, hopefully. So.
Yeah. We're going to get this edited into you on streaming services as soon as we can.
Now.
No promises.
But right now, the Oscars are about to start.
Let's go. So we're going to run that up. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you for participating in history with us. And
the glazing.
As it was written.
Okay.
Thank you, Denis, for being the Lisan Agaib.
Lisan Agaib.
Lisan Agaib.
And with
roll that outro music.
Let's go.
Lisan Agaib. I feel like I'm not saying it right.